Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
You're so excited, what?
Showing you work.
I'm excited to be here.
I just get excited and then I get... No, because it makes me hot and excited and I can't.
That's great. Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are in the world. I'm Russell Tovey.
I'm Robert Diamond.
And this is Talk Art.
Welcome to Talk Art.
How are you, Rob?
I'm so excited.
Me too.
Why?
We are in Kent with one of my most favourite artists ever, and we've come to her studio, which I've been wanting to do for a long, long time. And we're sat down in front of an artist that trained in the 1950s and then re-emerged and rediscovered painting and re-engaged with painting in the 1980s to then kick off a fantastic, remarkable career. She's also incredibly charming and just giving me thumbs up.
and incredibly stylish.
Incredibly stylish. Yeah. And I just absolutely love this work so much. I collect this work and I've been seeing this work for years.
And currently we are sat down with this amazing artist in the actual studio where there is newspaper all over the floor, incredible brand new paintings that are going to be in the show in New York later this year. Yes. We've just had a preview of them. Apparently only one or two people have actually seen them before and they are remarkable.
Yeah.
They're incredible actually. So we are very happy
to welcome
to Talk Art, Rose Wiley.
Hello Rose.
Thank you so much for talking with us.
Gracias. Hello.
Yeah. It's just a chit chat.
I like to come. I think, you know, you said there's people all over the floor.
Yeah.
It's so good because, one, it makes this noise when you're walking about. And there's that film man, is it Tom? What's his name? Gus Van Sant. Do you know Gus Van Sant?
Yeah.
Who has a noise running often throughout a film, like feet dragging or skateboards or. There's a continuum. There's a noise which sort of knits the whole film together and identifies it. And I think here you have that same noise of paper moving, and it's very comfortable to work on.
Like a pulse going through the day.
It does. It gives. And I think some artists say that they get their back start to ache after painting in the studio because the floors, they're often hard in studios. It's kind of carpeting. It's nice.
It's true, actually. It's very comforting.
It is. Yeah. It's nice, and it's thick, and it's different thicknesses. And
it's like bedding.
It is like bedding. It's a bit like being in a nest.
It is. It's
hamster cage.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yes, and at the same time, it's not. It's kind of industrial, too. It's not domestic, because you don't find it in people's rooms, too. You don't find it in the drawing room or dining room or something.
It separates it from
that.
Yeah. When you take elements in your work, you're inspired by multiple things. And I guess having these papers around, you could suddenly look down one day and be inspired by what you're seeing that you're walking on.
Completely right. There was one point when I wanted an ear. And it was, I'd done a big profile of my daughter and I wanted to check on the ear because the drawing didn't have an ear and you're supposed to put ears in. Well, that's what Mr. Angra says. He says always when painting, never when painting a head omit the ear.
Right.
So I thought, well, okay, I'll put the ear in. Anyway, I looked around, I thought there'll be an ear somewhere. The only sideways ear I could find was Mrs. Thatcher.
Oh, wow.
And I thought, My daughter won't thank me for having that.
No, please, yes.
So I didn't use it.
So you didn't have the ear in that one?
Yeah, I made it up.
So you made it up, okay. I like ears. I'm always drawn to ears.
Yeah.
Ears are my thing.
Well, that's one of your nicknames. People call you ears.
They do.
Oh, no, I guess I'd forgotten that. But that is true. But that was, yes, that was the, it was Mrs. Thatcher. And I didn't use her ear.
Good. That's good news. So we're in your studio and we have around us five paintings and there's another in the next room, which are works that you've been working on for your New York super show that's coming out in November at David's Werner, who you signed with a year and a half ago now, wasn't it?
It's been pushed forward. There's a slot.
Right.
Which is useful for something afterwards, but it shortens the time. So it's going to be open and depending on whether I'm ready for the, you know, like in a sense, I've got enough paintings now to use. So it's a question of whether you want to do some more. I've got one I want to do, Serena Williams.
Oh, really?
And one I want to do of a couple of footballers.
Mm.
And Serena Williams, it's a slice across her body and she's wearing her tutu.
Tutu.
So it's very close to her shape and it's just a slice and it'll be an outline. It'll be very dense colour. It'll be very different in colour from the paintings that are here in the studio now, mm-hmm. which are in effect.
I think I saw a drawing last year you did of Serena where she's having the tantrum. Was it
you
her
may have
tutu?
Seen it. I have done one somewhere, but this is not the whole of her body. It's a bit. It's right. A scent. It's a detail. It's cropped.
Right, right, right.
It just shows a bit of her chest, her waist, and a bit of her bum. And it'll be just two lines showing it.
Right.
But it'll be a very dense colour. Mind you, it may not turn out like I'm saying. I may not do it, but that's what I think I might do.
Do you like the people that you paint and draw?
I like Serena Williams. I think she's just so powerful. I mean, I like playing tennis. I think she's just pretty ace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's incredible.
But I also like Venus, and I've done paintings of Venus. Mm. I've done paintings of Henman, and that's why recently I decided, well, why bother with other people? Why not put yourself in the painting?
Yes.
Which is what I did. I did myself playing, which I thought was a good move forward.
That's right.
Let's not be too doormatty. Yeah.
That's right. And we're looking at paintings now with yourself.
Yeah, I was going to say, these actually have RW and you
they
in an evening dress.
They do. It's my initial. It is the frock I bought. I bought this evening dress. my sister had a child and the NHS gave a certain amount of money to pay someone to come and help, you know, when the child was born. It was to relieve hospitals and stuff. You have the child at home. And my sister said, do you want to do it? And it was the summer holidays. And I said, yes, okay. So she paid me what she would have paid, you know, an NHS helper.
Mm-hmm.
So I helped with her other children, etc., and her. And with the money, I bought this frock. And wow. It was staggering, but I never wore it.
Oh, you never wore it?
No.
So you bought an evening dress and never wore it. Wow.
That's right. I spent the whole of that summer money on never wore it. And it was sort of sculptural. It was like stepping into armour.
Wow.
Your shoulders stuck out at the top. And I had quite weedy arms. So you had and it was black. And I was never, I was actually slightly suntanned, but I can say I was white, but I wasn't. I wasn't particularly, because I used to swim a lot. And it was just a superb frock. It's black.
And did you plan to wear it, or was it always something you just wanted to keep as?
I just thought I might live in it. I thought it was so good. Go to bed in it. It was just marvellous. It had a shaped skirt, rather like the medieval retort, which is what that, in fact, is also links to an alchemy book I've got. So a sort of 16th century chemical little mixer. Do you know a glass?
A little beaker.
Do you know a retort? Do you know those little?
No, I don't know what that is, but this is the shape you're describing.
It's
like a
bottle.
Conical sort of.
It's got a neck. It's got quite a longer neck than that, really more like the more like that one.
More like the dress shape, okay.
But I put the two together because I've always liked this book with bottles, alchemy bottles, from the 16th, 15th century. I don't know where they come from. So that the frock was a bit like a bottle.
Right.
Which doesn't sound... doesn't sound all that attractive, but in fact, the frock was good.
Yeah. So in a way, these paintings, you're actually finally getting to wear the dress through the action of making the painting.
It's surrogate. I don't know what the word is. I don't know what that means. What does it mean? What does surrogate mean? Something that stands in for something. What is it?
It's surrogate, I think.
A surrogate model. Yeah. What is it? Something. I don't know.
Yes.
Okay.
It stands in for...
Yeah.
Like a substitute for what...
For the actual real experience instead
you
of
say
become
like a sausage, I do
substitute. It's like a sausage.
I like a sausage.
You're like surrogate, no sausage. Yeah,
it's like a sausage that you never wore.
This is yourself in these paintings, and that's from memory.
It is myself, but it doesn't look like me. I didn't have black hair. I had sort of. What do I do with it? I used to pour a bit of bleach on it sometimes. I never went to a hairdresser. I used to put bleach on it and swim a lot, and it used to go quite a light brown. So, but this light brown simply came from the pencil I picked up to do the drawings. I did the drawings. It was called lichen green or lichen green or lichen. I don't know. No idea how you say it.
All those ways.
L-I-C-H-E-N anyway.
Yeah.
Green, but in fact it's brown. But it's the colour of a dead oak leaf, I think, which I like very much. But, I mean, the frock wasn't that colour, but the drawing. And then I thought that the kind of... what was imposed by the drawing would be a very good way to make the painting. I hate the word challenging, but you can't rely on colour to help or objects to come in, like a table or a car or dog or anything. So that's what I was stuck with, and because it's very big, it's 12 foot by 17 foot.
Wow!
It meant that the work had to. It had to work close up and also from a distance, so it was drove me nuts, in fact.
Do you find yourself walking really close to the canvas and then stepping back?
Exactly. And that one over there, I found that I did the legs about, I don't know, 18 times, 20 times.
Wow. Really?
Very small legs.
Yeah.
Because they looked okay when you were standing close to it from a distance. They didn't have grip. So I kept trying it and trying it and trying it. And finally I did two. I stuck a spare pearl, if you look.
Yeah.
A dangling pearl on as well. And I'll stick them on with PVA.
And you're happy with the results now of how everything's looking?
Well, I keep looking at it and think, am I happy? Sometimes I'm hugely happy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is it. It's no good always doing the same painting. It's no good. It's boring, you know, it's boring for the artists and presumably very boring for the viewer.
Mm-hmm.
So, but more so, more important, it's boring for the artist, I think, to do the same. Anyway, so I wanted to do something new. And that's, in fact, what I think I've done. And so because of that, I'm a bit iffy about it. Some days I love it, and some days I think, well, no, I should add a colour. And I think, no, don't do that.
Mm. What I really love about it is the there's a kind of face on the right hand.
Would you tell me about
here?
The face? Because it looks a bit like a tree, don't you think?
Well, but I love the eye, actually. Mm. And there's this real sense, like you were saying, the viewer.
Mm.
I feel like that figure there is watching you really enjoying wearing this dress, and it's almost like joyous kind of spinning around, you know, dancing. That's the kind of energy I get from it. Is this really...
There's also his face. This face here is straight on. The profile is, I don't know what's the word for that. You're looking straight at it.
Yeah, like directly at it.
That bloke, the face is tilted
Yeah.
backwards. You're looking up it. So it's... although it looks like it's extremely casual, some of the painting, in fact, it's not at all. It answers a lot of art debate questions.
Right.
And I think putting his face, tipping it over, so you're looking up his nose, that's why it's so small. You know, his face is tipped and his cheek is slightly over the eye, but if you made the cheek too round, it'd look ridiculous to cover the eye. And so, anyway, it was... And I think, if you look at it as a whole, it looks a little bit like a pin drawing of a man dancing, or woman, you know, with arms up and...
Yeah, it's almost like they're dancing together. Yeah,
and there's movement. You put movement in that with the lines, haven't you?
Yes, it's just like a single figure. If you don't see it as a face, or it could be a tree with a sort of leaf on the top.
Mm.
So there's an ambiguity in it. Well, there's no ambiguity here.
No.
Or that.
Yeah.
Well, that's what somebody said. They liked the apparent casualness of the border, and then the certainty, and very closely encompassed area and considered area of the figure in it.
Yeah, the combination of those two energies.
It's full of conflicts. Really,
exactly, yeah.
Yes.
How do you feel about your work going to New York, being seen in New York?
I think it's hugely exciting. I mean, what could be nicer? Smashing to be with Zwerner and great to be in New York.
Yeah, how was that story with Zwerner then? How did that all come about?
Oh, it's just lovely. I was with the Ari from Union Gallery, now Choi and Lager.
Yeah.
Because his gallery is small in London, much, much bigger in Cologne, and another gallery in Korea. So he's got... when I joined him, it was after a send-in show at Norwich, East International. And he asked me if I'd care to show with him. And I said, yes, he had a fantastic gallery under the arches near Tate Modern. Very near the Jarwood space. Do you know the area?
What space?
The Jarwood.
Oh, yes, of course, yeah.
So it's very close. It's 2 minutes away from... So it's very near Tate Modern. It was near, and it was under the railway lines. And so there was huge arches and very high. And you could hear the trains, and it was industrial and big and thriving. And then there was that great crash, financial crash, 2007, something like that.
2008, I think it was, 2007.
And Yari pulled into his second gallery, which was a very small gallery in East London. And so, anyway, I stayed with Yari, and the gallery was a bit small for my work because it was truly no bigger than this room.
Mm-hmm.
Is that my phone?
Yeah.
Shall I leave it? It'll go off in a minute.
Yeah, if you want to leave it, it's fine.
I'll leave it. Yeah. I'll be out. it was fine. And Yara was showed at Cologne and Korea and so on, but then decided I needed... a bigger platform.
Mm-hmm.
And so Yari, this was a totally happy situation. And Zwerner were very agreeable to working with Union as I had, and using the same... I use a framer, a lot of work, and it's all worked out very happily because work has stayed with Yari, technical work, and in fact he comes down and does collects for photography, and we've had a very close relationship for, quite a long time, about 15 years or maybe more. I'm very hazy about dates. And Yari works very well with Zwerner, and I love Zwerner. I think Rodolphe is superb to work with.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
Rodolphe is very good. and also, he's very good to talk to painting about. He's very nice to show. He's seen these.
Yeah.
These paintings.
Is it important to you to have
He looks at them a long time.
Yes.
He doesn't just come and sort of make a snap judgment. He really looks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
So it's really important to you to have that, like the gallery artist relationship for you has to be really strong.
Yes. And he's extremely, he's very, very, you know, you look forward to a visit because he's very nice too. He brings a smashing lunch.
Does he? That's good to know.
And everything is, it's been a very happy relationship because I haven't left. I haven't just said bye-bye union.
No, you've got to continue that meaningful relationship.
I think that didn't make me feel very good to do that.
Yeah, of course.
And some galleries won't countenance a secondary. Others will, some do and some don't.
I think it's a new thing that the bigger galleries are realising it's good to keep the smaller boutique galleries link, because often they're the people that have championed the artist and actually know the artist on a kind of emotional level.
They've done
level.
A lot of groundwork. Exactly. And they've got a lot of clients that can move and say.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think, it's
a good combination.
Well, it's worked. And it's happier because you don't feel that you've betrayed someone, you haven't pulled out, you haven't, you know, dropped someone down the river, you haven't. It's a happy.
And also, it must be sad if you lose a champion of your work who's helped you, you know, through a period of your life.
Well, that's what I mean. Someone starts off. I mean, Yara saw my work in East International, invited me to show with him, and went on showing. You know, although you don't sell much at the beginning, he stuck with that.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think then to say toodle-pip and move on is not exactly very...
No. I actually first discovered your work through Union, and then also the National Museum of Women's Art in Washington.
Yes. Yes.
They had that prize, and they did that big exhibition, and that was the first time I'd seen you on that kind of larger scale somehow. But it was really great.
Well, that
really
was useful because it was totally American. I think it was international women.
Yes.
It was...
You were the only English artist.
Well, they were all American except me, finally, the shortlist. And then they purchased one, and yes, I got the prize for it, and that was very, very useful because that allowed Germaine Greer to come down. It didn't allow her to come down because it was Great Britain.
Yeah.
And the only English person in an American show, an international show. So that was something that she could respond to that, and she did come down, and that was very helpful.
Great.
So that was good.
Are you in the studio every day?
Some days are not, but usually Art Connected every day, like looking up an artist, you know, on the computer, or checking out on someone's work I'm not sure of and that I'd like to see again. But... I often draw most days, but not. There's no rule. If I see something like a Puerto Rican wall, I think I'm going to draw that. Then I do. But when I'm painting, I paint all the time up here, and I'm here all day, often until late into the night.
And what is your feeding and drinking system when you're working solid like that?
Very erratic.
Really?
Yes. And I do work sometimes until 3 or 3:30 in the night.
Wow.
So it's quite late, but then I get up late.
But you do actually live in this house, don't you, as well?
Yes, well, that's what's
so it's a home studio in
well,
the truest sense.
So you can come upstairs at 11 o'clock
and
watch the news or something, and then you can come upstairs. And then you can look at something and think, I've got to change it. And then you can change it, and you can go on until 2:30, 3. If you rented a studio somewhere where you wouldn't do that. Mm. You know, before I go to bed, I often just come in here, which is fatal because then you start to work.
Yeah.
And then you're up all night.
And you don't have to. Also, you don't feel responsibility for the room because you don't have to work in it, which means you do because you don't have to. Because I don't like imposed rules, and I don't like feeling that I have rented a studio, so I have to use it. I don't like that. It would make me feel
right, kind
of guilty about not being there.
Yes, I wouldn't like any of that business. This is free and easy here.
Yeah, totally.
You can do a bit and then go and cook something or do a lot and not cook anything.
But... And the work is always inspired by popular culture, but when you say you sit down and draw, do you ever just let whatever's coming out, like an inner monologue, come out on the paper? Or do you always
It's wherever I've seen it, or something. It can be something in the high street. You can see a fantastic outfit on someone, you know. Often African. I think the way of swathing and wrapping and putting on rather than pre-cut and pre-made, I think it wouldn't matter. You could see someone on someone's shoes or someone's face, mm-hmm. someone's face sticking out in the train. You know, you can see a face just sticking out beyond the seat. There's a little gap between the seats and you can see a part of a face. And
well, like these profiles in his paintings.
Yes, all of that is all part of the whole thing. And anything off the floor, anything on the... in a film, anything. Doesn't matter where the image comes from, I don't think.
And do you take photographs of those, or are they... you kind of put it in your memory?
I remember them and draw them.
Right.
That's why they transform, so they're not literal... Memory does away with literality, because if you're looking at something, you can give too much information, or you can be too concerned about the reality of it. Whereas if you've memorized it, you remember significant to me things about that person. So you're kind of sifting and sorting. I know that's somebody's title of somebody's book.
Yeah.
But you do, you don't just confront something and put it down. It's gone through a process of transformation.
Yeah. Wow.
But also it has to work with the memory of that person. You can't then just, you know, if someone's got dark hair, to make them have dark hair rather than put yellow hair on them. Having said that, I've just done Snow White with yellow hair, so... Doesn't matter. I don't stick with it.
What rules do you set for yourself, though, when you make work? Have you given yourself...
I don't know what the rules are. It's just going to look okay as far as I can... in the way that I think it looks okay, or have quality in the way I think it has quality. And then if it's... Because it can look like just complete shit. I can't tell you how bad painting can look mm-hmm. when you start. It mm-hmm. can look either there's no point, or it's just bad, or it's too flash in the wrong way. I don't mind flash. It's flash in the wrong way. It's mm-hmm. you know, I don't mind kitsch. It's kitsch in the wrong way. Then you've got to get rid of it. And those are the rules. Whether it's the right way or the wrong way is the rule.
And I heard that you don't necessarily like making decisions, but painting, you have to make decisions all the time.
Yeah, I hate
and that's like a constant battle in a way with the painting.
Never stops. I don't know why. I do not know why I do it.
Yeah.
It is all about decision. You know, how are you going to, whether it's going to be sloppy or sloshy or tight or, you know, I don't know. Chick, or that's going to be naff, or that's going to be semi-naff, half-naff. I don't know.
But what you deem as, what you perceive as a mistake, you celebrate in your work. You allow us as the audience to see your mistakes and your process.
Yes,
because
I do.
You build up sections.
Yeah, it's totally revealed, like there, over there with the legs.
Should I do that with clothes too? If I mend something, I let the mend show.
I don't
mind if it cockles up a bit and the stitches show, because I think the stitches... the fact that you have decided to mend something means something to me. It means you aren't wasting it. You're not going to throw it away. You're not going to. You respect it. I like a bit of respect.
I do too. I like it when you stitch something up, or you have a different button or something.
Yeah,
different button, the wrong button, too big. But it's got to be okay, the button.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's the other thing. It can be the wrong one, but it should be, as far as I'm concerned, it should be an okay button.
I saw a guy the other day with mismatching shoes,
yeah.
and it was the best look I'd ever seen.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't work at all, but he just looked so brilliant.
Yeah.
It was like one of the best things
I'd
seen. No, but I don't think I could. It's really funny. Some people can just pull these things off.
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, this is Russell Tovey and Robert Diamond from Talk Art, the arts podcast, and we're here today with Budweiser beer, and we're going to be talking about something very, very important to both of us, aren't we, Rob?
That's right. Budweiser, the king of beers, has joined forces with legendary artist Sir Peter Blake, the godfather of British pop art and someone that both of us have adored since we were kids.
I've loved pop art since I was a kid, and Sir Peter Blake has been a constant for me, alongside other pop art artists, the Americans like Andy Warhol, Roy Lichtenstein, Keith Haring. And I got into pop art, Rob, because I loved cartoons growing up. I mean, I still love animation. But suddenly I discovered that so many artists were referencing comic strips and cartoons in their artworks, and I could go and see them in museums, and I suddenly didn't need to grow up. And Sir Peter Blake was one of these artists that meant so much to me. And I think people, if they don't know the name Sir Peter Blake, you would certainly know his work. The album cover for The Beatles, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club, Oasis's Stop the Clocks. These are iconic art historical moments that this artist has actually been at the forefront of.
And you've met him, haven't you?
I've met him, yeah, at the South Bank Show Awards years ago. I was there for the History Boys, and he was there, and I got incredibly excited and met him. But you've not met him before, have you, Rob?
I have. I've actually even been to his house and hung out with him and his wife, and I got to make an amazing print with him, which was a huge privilege, actually. It was a real career moment for me. So Budweiser and Sir Peter Blake have come together to unite, and they have created an exclusive limited edition beer can, which doubles as a collectible piece of pop art.
And it was on display at London's Truerman Brewery on the 23rd and 24th of March this year, if you were lucky enough to get there. And also, were you one of the lucky few that were able to get one of the signed beer cans by Sir Peter Blake himself? And there was something very special there, wasn't there, Rob? What was that?
They've actually made the first ever fridge frame, which kind of is reminiscent of what we would be, you know, accustomed with in terms of a museum exhibit. Yeah. But this fridge frame is designed to display the limited edition can of beer as a work of art, but also keeps the beer cool.
Okay, I need a fridge full of fridge frames because this sounds incredible. So Peter Blake's work adorns the cans with all of his eye-catching simplicity. It features the Budweiser's iconic red bow tie logo, but it's encompassed by the artist's signature and his use of block colours and icons. They unveiled this artistic can in all of its glory in one of these fridge frames, as Rob said, which is very exciting. The limited edition cans are available to purchase as a four-pack for a limited time only in selected Tesco stores nationwide.
Budweiser and Sir Peter Blake, thank you for bringing us this cultural moment. I love it when art reaches new audiences, and I really feel like this is going to go into everyone's homes, and is really joyous. So head over to Tesco, pick up a four-pack. Thank you, Budweiser.
But also, if you want to get this collectible piece of art at home, Budweiser's also giving people the chance to own their very own exclusive fridge frame. Beer and art lovers can register their interest by visiting www.budweiser.co.uk/Sir Peter Blake collab. That's budweiser.co.uk/Sir Peter Blake collab. Budweiser and Talk Art with Sir Peter Blake.
When I went, I remember going to the Royal College to do something. I think it was a print or something.
Right.
I think it was East. I had commissioned. I had to do a print, and I did it with the Royal College. And you know, it's quite an advanced, stylish place, the Royal College. Mm-hmm. I remember it caused a huge lot of interest, and I could see people's eyes dropping because I had different coloured shoelaces, not different shoes, like you just said, but white on one and pink on the other.
Oh, the shoelaces?
Yes.
Oh.
These were in your
trainers.
Studio sneakers, I think we talked about
trainers,
before.
Trainers, yes. I had one pink and one was pink and one was white. And it did cause, I think people just didn't expect it. Don't know why. The other thing that was interesting the other day, I put just a dot on each fingernail of red. Mm. That was very good. Minimal. So, I was talking to someone quite well known, and he said to me, show me your hand, and I showed him my hand. What for? I said, I was suspicious, definitely, yeah. Immediately suspicious.
Yeah, going to read your palm or something, yeah.
And I thought, you know, well, and he said, no, the other one. So I showed, and what had interested him was that there was a dot on each fingernail, red, dark, the dark sort of blacky red. Because generally women have...
Full nail.
Full, yes.
Yeah, like very carefully painted as
that's
well.
That's right, and I had a
and if there's
a
no mistakes allowed kind of thing.
That's which cool. had come about through leaving it on and that it had worn off all round and I'd thought it was quite good.
You're going to start a new trend, Rose.
But you are incredibly stylish.
Yeah, you are.
You always have been. You're very striking in your style. It's unique to you, as is your work is so unique to you.
I don't know. I've always... I used to buy clothes and immediately cut them up.
Mm.
To customise them for yourself? Or?
Yes. Make them more make them more interesting as far as I was concerned. Yeah. Or fit better or have some more... Yes, I've done that.
Is that something you did from a young age?
Sorry, I didn't hear that.
Is that something that you've done from a young age?
Oh, no, since about 17 probably or 16.
Okay.
Wow. Who do you look at in your peer group as artists that you are inspired by or who's been before that you've inspired by or who's coming up, who emerging-wise?
Well, there are people like, for instance, Tara Hanley. I remember going to a show he had in the Victoria Mirror and he had great lumps of cardboard stuck on a painting.
Mm. And I love Tara.
They were sticky. Well, I'm a big fan of Tara.
Yeah, me too.
And he's got a terrific touch. He had these great lumps of cardboard sticking off a painting. But they were torn. And I thought, well, that's pretty good because I do that. Mm. And there was a sympathy at once. This was a long time ago. I don't know how long ago Tara first showed at Victoria Mirror.
Oh,
it was his
like
first show at Victoria Mirror.
Or something? Or longer, maybe.
And I had a great sympathy with him. And also with Jonathan Mees at one point when he had a show in...
Stuart Shaves, was it Modern Art?
Stuart Show.
Yeah.
Mm. And he put up a whole stack of paperwork on the window with sellotape, magic tape. The thing is, I've always done that, but I've never... When you try to put that up as a gallery, they went, you've got to have a platform to do it. Tala had a platform. If you haven't got a platform, you might as well just go and sing for it. I did it, but it was never acceptable.
Right.
They did it, and it was acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think you've got to do here? You've got to get a platform. No change in what you do, but right. You've got to get a platform.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting.
So what did that do then? Where did you go after you saw that show and you realised that that was...
Well, I don't know, I just saw it with a lot of 100 other shows and then I just went about my business as usual, getting nowhere, for some time. And then with East and with... I used to get into East quite often. I was in East several times.
Hmm.
And I used to get into Joelwood. I got into open things.
Like
but not closed things. I don't know what... I think that's significantly interesting in itself.
Yeah.
Because often it's more difficult to get into open things than it is to, be with your gallery.
Yeah, it's true, because they have committees of different opinions.
It's an opposite sort of thing.
Yeah.
So Jarwood and East and the the Liverpool one, John Moore's, I would and the Royal Academy, I got into those.
You won the John Moore's Prize, didn't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Well, that was very good. It was very nice because it's a good... They have a great collection.
Uh-huh.
Mm.
So that was...
Oh, so if you win the prize, then they acquire it?
I think... I'm not sure it's automatic. Yes, I think so.
Right.
It may be automatic.
Right.
Yes. Anyway, that happens. Yes. So you're in the you're there with Peter Doig and Hockney and it's nice.
Yeah, totally.
Wow.
I actually see a lot of Hockney influences in your work at various points as well. Is he a big person for you to look to? Or
I think he's said some good things. He has. I really think he has said some very interesting things about painting. And I think his early... A lot of us think this. His early work was very exciting.
Mm.
And his backdrops for theatre, very exciting.
Yep.
And then somehow some of the other stuff. But then he's mixed, and I guess I have a place for Hockney.
Mm-hmm.
I think his drawing's a bit like Ang, you know, I have a place for Hockney.
I love all his early drawings and the prints he made. Like, his early printmaking was just incredible.
But my current love is somebody called, and I'm not going to be able to think of her name, Cervantes. Alida Cervantes, do you know such a person? I think she's Mexican.
I don't know, she's...
South American.
Okay.
Anyway. And she's...
What's her work like?
Lovely.
Is it? And what, is she a painter as well?
She's a painter. Yes, it's very sort of primitive and... but it's not mannered or... I just think it's great.
Mm.
But then I like a lot of American, black American painting.
And like folk art.
I like Faith Ringgold.
Oh, yes, great.
Do you know her?
Yes.
Yeah, she's great.
And Sam Doyle and... So this isn't gender-based. Mm. I like, just what the work looks like.
Yeah, I think I read something...
And Kerry James Marshall is great.
Oh, Kerry James Marshall.
That was Werner artist. Yeah, totally. He's incredible. Yeah.
Yes, I've always been...
He moved the dial, didn't he? He changed...
Did I go with you to that show in New York? Was I with you?
The Met?
I think, yeah, The Met.
Yeah,
and it was just an incredible show. It's one of the best shows I saw, like, in decades. I mean,
Which one was that?
I've been into art. The Kerry James Marshall. It was, like, a huge solo show of his.
It's called Mastery, M-A-S-T-R-Y.
Do you know, the first one I saw was at Camden Arts Centre.
Ah, yeah.
And that was terrific. That's where I just thought, the man is great.
Totally.
It's traditional. It's, it's not modern art, but it's wonderful.
Mm.
It's not academic, it's not, it looks real, it's tremendously good. I just thought it was absolutely great.
Mm-hmm.
Last time I came here with Catherine Bernhardt, who's a New York-based artist, and she's a big admirer of yours. And that was such a great experience to visit with her and kind of see your studio through her eyes almost, because I felt like the joy and excitement she had being here. It was just such a nice experience, and even her son was here with us, and it was just a very funny...
You were in a group show.
She came. She's great. She's done some good things, I think.
Yeah, totally.
They're very alive, and they're very... And they're connected to Cuban and Mexican, which is something, of course, which I like.
Yeah.
I like emerging cultures.
Yeah.
Rather than the sort of European, oh-so-settled... I mean, there's loads of stuff in European, which is good, but I also very much like Cuban and Mexican and Puerto Rican. I mean, I just love the look of it. I'm just an absolute sucker for it.
Yeah.
And her son was terrific.
Hilarious.
I can't remember his name.
Khalifa.
He opened, the door was open, it was summer. He looked at the garden. He just put his hands to his head and he said, "Oh, my God." So I said, "What do you mean? What's wrong with it? Why? Oh my God! I mean, I think he didn't think it was a garden. I'm not sure what he thought it was, but."
But you've lived in this house for 40 years, haven't you, or more?
Yes.
So 50 years. Okay. And the garden is quite remarkable. It's got a real magic to it, and kind of.
Well, the garden, I don't do anything to it much.
Yeah.
I do walk. I walk up it to hang clothes on the line.
Yeah.
I like stuff drying outside. I like wind. I like the smell of stuff that's dried rather than dangling it over a radiator or putting it in a dryer.
Yeah, there's nothing
dryer.
Better, is there? Yeah.
So I do walk up the garden, and so there are paths. But when we bought the house, there was something called a lower lawn. Laid to lawns, it was called, which I thought was a rather smart thing. And they had a sort of little, it's a very small garden, small lower lawn and then an upper lawn. But now, because I never cut it, and I haven't cut it for years, I don't know how many years, but it hasn't been cut for years, which is a better, more accurate way of saying saying it. You get the drift. It's not that I haven't cut it. Nobody's cut it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's no head gardener who isn't cutting it.
Right.
Yeah.
It has
You've
not.
You've left it to nature.
Yes, that's right. Because I like nature. I don't like control.
No, and nature appears in your work a lot.
Yes. But I like control where I want it. But I don't like too much control. You know, I don't like unnecessary. I think that's got it. I don't like unnecessary control.
Right, right.
Or imposed controls. I like you to find your own control.
Wow.
And to know it with conviction what control you're going to work with. And the garden, the rose, it had, as well as being laid to lawns, it also had rose gardens and asparagus. And the roses have since gone completely wild. And they've gone up and climbed up, and they lie on the top of hawthorn trees. So they lie on the top of hawthorn trees. So you actually can't see them because
there are roses up there.
But they're wild
wow,
roses.
That's great.
They're no longer what people would call roses.
Right.
They are, and they were cultivated roses. They have gone wild.
And has the asparagus gone wild, or is that
asparagus is long gone?
Long, long, long gone.
Long gone.
Although the pathway in your garden hasn't actually appeared in your paintings.
Yes, there's a bit. There's a Werner Herzog painting I did with them. I used the brick path in it, yes, and also the brick path outside in the room plot. Yes, I have used, and trees I've used, and bark of trees, and flowers. Yeah, I like.
No, I can't help thinking that we're sat in, like, a nest here. I feel so cozy and, like, so safe nice. Somehow. But so I saw over there, there's a postcard of one of your paintings, which is of an aeroplane. And the theme, you know, linking to nests, of flight and birds or that kind of element in your work, I've always really related to and I really love. And I know some of it's wartime, but there's also other references.
Yeah, I mean, planes fly and bats. Dragonflies are good. I love bats. Are terrific. I love my cat used to catch bats.
You've got a bat on the front door.
I have got a bat on the door. And the cat caught bats sometimes and left it lying on there.
Wow.
But I like, I think butterflies are pretty unique.
Mm-hmm.
They appear in Walt Disney, they appear in children's books. You don't sort of see them much afterwards, do you? In later life, they don't feature much, do they? Mm. I don't think butterflies. But they are pretty funny. They fly in a very interesting way.
Yeah.
That's true, actually.
They're only alive for 24 hours, aren't they?
Yeah, but when you're a kid, it's true, you get really taught about butterflies somehow. Like, I remember it being part of my education or something, and then you don't really think about them as an adult, unless you're a butterfly collector.
They have a nice context, don't they? I mean, if you think about what they do, they're out there, and they sit on leaves and flowers, and, I mean, they're not like bluebottles and flies, they don't sit on dead meat, and there's something nice about them.
Yeah,
and they came
that's
from
true.
Caterpillars. Maybe it's metaphorical that.
Yeah, they start from caterpillars, don't they?
Yeah, they come do, from. Yeah, yeah.
Did you hear about frogs in Kent? Do you know that people volunteer in Kent to help frogs across the road?
Oh, I love that.
Did you know?
I didn't know that.
My mum loves frogs. She'd volunteer to do that.
Apparently, at this time of year, they leave their where they've been hibernating,
yeah.
wherever it is, and they move to spawn in water in a pond. And so they cross roads, and so they get squashed and killed. They get killed in, you know...
Big numbers.
Hundreds, yes. And they're becoming extinct.
Yeah.
So apparently people are volunteering to see the toads and frogs across the road, like lollipop ladies. I absolutely love that.
Do you like to come down for a good story?
We're going to come and help the frogs. I grew up opposite a little pond in Berkshire, and we used to see all the frogs born when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And then when they all start becoming alive,
they get legs and then finally the tails fall off.
There's nothing more magical. And when you see all the tiny little babies, oh my God, so cute.
They are cute. Mm.
I love it.
So we ask everyone who comes on Talk Art, what is your touchstone artwork? If you could do an art heist and you could steal an artwork from anywhere in the world legally, get away with it, no one will know, what would that be?
Well, I've always said it would be a certain early Cézanne. I've had this conversation over dinner at a party, and I said I would keep, or I would like this early, this, I do mean early, I don't mean a late, more intellectual Cezanne, I mean like The Picnic or The Murder, but it isn't The Murder, that's a bit dark. The Picnic, what's another one? There's some very, very early ones which are very rarely reproduced, which are, I think they're very kind of, they're a bit untaught looking.
Uh-huh.
They're not clever. And I said that I would like that painting, and the men at the table when we were talking about it, they said, oh, well, that's fine, yes, we could have it, then we could sell it. And I said, excuse me, what do you mean? What do you mean sell it? Because something I would hang in the house. I'd stick it on the wall downstairs. And they said, well, no, we don't. I mean, you don't want to have a Cezanne here. Oh, what do you mean here? Well, so they were busy selling my Cezanne. This was all imagined.
At the party.
It wasn't, yes. It was all imagined. I haven't got a Cezanne.
Yeah. Hypothetical Cezanne.
It was hypothetically selling your stolen Cezanne.
So I'd have to stick with a very early Cezanne. This is what I think I'd...
That's great.
I'd quite... It's around about the Temptation of St. Anthony sort of time. They were passionate and they were a bit primitive looking.
What year would that be that would have been painted?
Well, let me see. When did he die? 1907, I think he died. So it would be, when was he born? 39, I suppose, about 50.
1850.
40, 50. About 1850 something.
Right.
Wow.
Yes, I think. I don't know, but my maths aren't too hot.
My maths are terrible.
But around, let's say 1860, 50,
60. Wow.
Look in my book, and there's one, but it's not quite the right one. Oh, but right, there right, is one.
The book that's out at the moment, that Clary Wallace, who's head curator.
Yes, because that's right, because they said, you know, pick something that you like, and I'd said, you know, one of these four, and they have picked one of the four. But the first priority one was difficult to find, so it's right, not there, but it's the same, roughly the right date.
But it appears in your recently published book, and what's that called? Rose Wiley.
Rose Wiley, the book.
I don't know what
it wasn't related to the subject.
I don't. It hasn't got a title. I don't.
No, it's a separate book that Clary was working on. Yeah, Clary's amazing.
Yes, I don't think.
How was The Serpentine? I mean, what was that experience like?
That was tremendously good.
Such a great show.
Because that was new works and older works, wasn't it?
It was mixed.
Yeah.
And I've always liked the park because I lived there, well, near it, Bayswater. when I was five, not for long. Melissa was great to work with.
Mm.
Hans Ulrich is marvellous. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's just something else and he's wonderful. And it was very nice to associate. I mean, Hans Ulrich came down with his exhibition director was, I've forgotten his name, was it Jochen? Jochen?
Mm-hmm.
Who went to Brazil. Before Lizzie went to, Lizzie took his job and they came down and, what is her name? Because I always forget her name. Give me help, the head of The Serpentine before Jana. What's her name?
Julia Payton-Jones.
She came down. It was always the whole thing because they're such a powerhouse and they're also glamorous, you know, Well, I've met you at the party. That's when I last saw you.
That's right.
The Serpentine. Oh, yeah, we saw you.
That's when I last saw you at the party.
That was so fun. Yeah. And you were with your daughter.
That's right.
That was a really fun evening.
That's right. She was. Yeah. We were all knocked out by a response to her when she said hello.
Oh, really?
Can you remember? Yes, we thought tremendously good.
She was in the drawing of yours with Stuart Lee.
Stuart Lee was down.
But you did a drawing of Stuart Lee and then a drawing of your daughter watching Stuart Lee.
That's right. Something about, you're right, and then a Korean lady laughing and saying, who wouldn't? Yes, I'm a big fan of Stuart Lee. Yes, that's right.
I loved the title of your show at Serpentine, Quack Quack, because it just brought back so many childhood memories of feeding the ducks in Berkshire for me. And I guess if you were 5 years old living near there, maybe that's also some kind of early association.
I did, because one of the things is that because it was 1940, and there were a lot of German aeroplanes in the sky and a lot of English anti-aircraft guns were firing at them. You could hear the noise going on all the time. And it was called Akak.
Oh, that's right.
So Akak and Quack Quack.
Yeah.
And Dada. I mean, I like Dada because I like irreverence. So the whole thing came together because it was playful, easy to remember.
Yeah.
It's not sort of clever. It's not quoting from Milton or Chaucer or Plato, or, you know, which I always find rather tedious. It's
accessible.
It was most accessible.
Yeah.
And I found when I talked to taxi men going there, and they said, "Oh, well, you know, where are you going?" And I said, "Oh, you know," I said, "I've got a show that's," they'd say, I told them what it was called. They would start to laugh and they would start to say it. And they would be driving through London saying quack, quack, which was, I thought, worth it. And
yeah,
I'd had one, had a show in Norway, where Munch was born. It's near, it's very near Oslo. About 2 years before that, I called it Woof Woof, and that was, that had no relevance. Quack Quack did have relevance. Mm. But it seemed, I thought at first that Serpentine may not find it an appropriate title. It's something you have to say, isn't it? If it's the title, it comes up.
Yeah, you have to say it all the
you
time.
You have to print
you're
it.
You're working
you,
there.
You have to say it. Some people might find it's a bit of a silly thing to say.
Right.
So, but I thought that was all fine.
Something I heard you say was that you really, there's this idea that you might see a, not a pheasant, sorry, what's the word?
Partridge?
With the big tail.
Peacock.
Peacock. That you might see a peacock and you're sort of, most people would be like, oh, that's very elegant and beautiful. But for you, what you loved were ducks. And I loved that. I was like, wicked.
I love ducks. I like them much more than peacocks
exactly.
any old day.
Yeah.
Much better shape, better walk. They fly better. They sound better.
They sound better. I agree.
Better. They probably eat them. They probably taste better. I have no idea. That's probably not the right thing to bring in with everything else. like these lovely ducks.
They taste nice.
Sorry to talk about eating. But I do think everything about ducks is good. And I think Jeremy Prince said something about ducks. He said they go down in well in China. This show will go down well in China because they love ducks.
Mm.
Something he said which was terribly clever, but unfortunately I've forgotten it. You know, everything they use, I think they eat everything except the quack quack or something, and you called your show Quack Quack. It was a very good extension of what in China might be connected to the duck.
Got it.
In the terms of the table, but except the noise, and I'd use the noise.
Mm-hmm.
And right now I'm looking at the window with beautiful afternoon spring daylight coming through and there's paint all over the glass. Is that do you use that as a palette or is it?
No, I don't. What I do is I make drawings, I've mentioned, I put them in plastic bags so they don't get completely obscured with paint. And then as you work, the plastic bag gets so painted, I mean as I work, you have to wipe it off with kitchen paper, and you can't wipe it in midair because it doesn't work, and there's no surface. So I lean the bag on the window and wipe it with the kitchen paper, which is just kitchen paper, which is just below.
Amazing.
And so that's wipe off.
I see. And
but also it becomes a stained glass.
Yeah, it does, doesn't
which
it?
Is quite funny.
Yeah, and what it's leading me to is literally stained glass. But what it's leading me to is one of the questions we have to ask every time to every guest is, "What is your favourite colour?"
Colour, favourite colour,
your favourite colour.
I don't know because it wouldn't be that because that's no colour.
That's like a combination of like hundreds of colours.
It's lost its colours. I don't know. I just like them all. I used to find yellow and black difficult, but I don't anymore. I found orange and black difficult, which is peculiar, which is what I've got.
Rob loves orange.
Yeah.
You like orange.
The minute I saw you, I was like,
I do
she's
like
wearing
pink.
An orange cardigan.
I like France West colours, for instance. I like pink. I love pale pink, pale light, pale. I love green, but I like black very much too. So I don't know. I haven't got one really.
Great. Good
answer. You do like colour.
I do like colour.
Yeah.
Yeah. But actually, I was really struck by the new work here. The kind of idea of sepia, or yeah, it's like, it does feel very different. And I haven't seen that before in your work. And like you said, you wanted to make a new painting.
Yeah.
I also really love the RW there because it's almost like some ancient language. It's almost like it isn't an RW. There's some kind of like hieroglyphics or something.
It is. It's like the hieroglyphics. They're primitive. They're ancient. They're like prehistoric.
Yeah.
And also like branding. Someone said that it reminded them of the branding and stencil.
Right.
All of that. And also that the RW is leaning over. It's not upright. Rather like the face.
Yeah.
That one's upright, but that one is...
I love that one.
Leaning away.
Yeah. Love them so much.
Well, Rose Wiley, thank you so much.
Thank you. What a coming privilege
on Talk
and a pleasure.
It's been
amazing.
One of the best we've ever done.
Not a bit.
No, I love talking to you so much. And I'm so grateful that you invited us to your home because this is such a magical place.
Actually,
he was coming on.
Oh, absolutely.
I think it's right.
About pressuring you to answer questions.
One more question before we go. So you were mentioning hanging the Cezanne in your house here somewhere downstairs. And I remember when we visited the first time, you showed us, you have lots of frames up of different pictures. So do you actually collect, or are they artist swaps, or how do you, or are they your own works, the ones that are up on the walls downstairs?
Stuck on the wall, do you mean?
I think you had some downstairs.
I've got a lot of other artists. The ones that have been given.
Yeah, they've been given to you. Okay.
Yes.
So gifts.
Given.
Yeah. From other artists.
Give no exchange.
So nice.
Do you like an art swap?
Well, I do. Yeah, I think it's interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, there's certain people I'd love to have an art swap with. I'm currently showing work with Neil Ruck. Do you know that?
Oh, wow.
I've been asked, he invited me to show, which I think is a huge treat for me.
Yeah.
Because as well as liking certain other artists, I found him very exciting when his first book came out. And he's asked me to put work into show with him in Leipzig, which I think is hugely fun. I like that.
Oh, congrats.
I've got something of his down there.
Really?
An etching.
Wow.
But I have got a drawing by Peter Blake.
Oh.
I like Peter, he's a nice man.
So, yes, he swapped. That was a swap.
Great. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks, Rose.
Maybe we can go out into the garden now after the interview.
Get in the garden.
Yeah, exciting times. Yeah,
Rocky might need a wee downstairs.
Yeah, we're going to go and get Rocky, and also you can let your wonderful cat out, maybe.
Yes.
Thank you so much for listening,
Rocky,
everybody.
I can let my cat out. I think he's gone to sleep.
Oh, I could hear him meowing a bit.
Can you hear him well?
Yeah, bless him. I think he could hear you talking, and he was like, what are you doing? Let me join in. Everyone listening, you can visit @talkart on Instagram and see images of Rose's work and artworks we've discussed in this episode. Thank you so much, Rose
Thank
Wiley.
You, Rose.
You're one of our art heroes, and it's been such a pleasure to spend time with you. Thank you.
Complete pleasure.
See you very soon, everyone.
See you guys. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Goodbye.
You've been listening to Talk Art with Robert Diamant and Russell Tovey. Follow us on Instagram @talkart, where you can view images of all artworks discussed in this episode. Recorded at Spiritland London by Anthony Shaw and edited by Gareth Isles. Subscribe to Talk Art on iTunes and Spotify. Give us a rating and write us a comment. Thanks for listening.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.